Okay, well, thank you very much for staying this late. I know you must be exhausted after the day at the conference here and itching to get to the party. So hopefully I've got some good content for you to keep you entertained for the next hour before we go and have some fun. So my name is Gareth Jones. I'm the API architect at OneNote at Microsoft. And here's what we're going to talk about today. So I'll give you a quick state of the nation of where OneNote is in 2015, and then do a tour through the basics of our API and the new features we've released recently and released today. And then go into the main demos around how to pull all of that together to do stuff with OneNote and Office 365. And then cut back to talking about a roadmap and what's next. So 2015, OneNote, digital note-taking from Microsoft. Completely cross-platform and free on every platform. Here's our upcoming universal OneNote application. Here's our iPad application. And you can see really one of the key things about OneNote and our real differentiator for us is that our content is extremely rich and particularly extremely freeform. So we've got some really rich content here, pictures, ink, embedded spreadsheets, lists. And the whole point is that it doesn't constrain you as you're in the early form of working on your ideas or working on projects. You can just put anything down wherever you like and really just find a way that works for you. And we'll see that has some impacts, knock-on impacts in API design and how you use APIs as we go along. So what's the business opportunity for you here with OneNote? Well, OneNote really is ubiquitous now. As well as it being cross-platform on every device from laptops down through tablets and phones to new wearable apps on the Apple Watch and on Android Wear, we're also pre-installed in a huge number of places, so you can guarantee that your users will already have the app. We're pre-installed on every new Windows machine with our universal app, and we're pre-installed on the Samsung Galaxy S6 and S6 Edge and a bunch of other Android tablets from a variety of manufacturers. Tens of millions of users in the Microsoft Cloud. And then when you connect us up through our ecosystem and APIs to Office 365 APIs, access to the hundreds of millions of general Office users. So we've been around as an API for about a year. OneNote itself has been around for about 13 years. We launched our API a little over a year ago, in March last year. And we focused at the time on our consumer API, people logging in with the Microsoft identity. And we've already developed a broad ecosystem based on that. A whole lot of apps in our app gallery. You can see the URL down at the bottom. Go check those out, I encourage you. And hundreds of apps registered against our endpoint. A couple of first-party apps to really pick out. And Note, Office Lens, a pocket scanner. We're going to see a lot more of that later in the talk. And OneNote Clipper. Go and grab things off the web. A Chrome extension or a bookmarklet for other browsers, whatever your favorite browser is, to go and grab web content and shape it just exactly how you'd like to go and capture it and grab it into your digital memory store. So if you've seen the Office 365 vision in the keynote for developers or at any of the other Office 365 sessions, you know we think about this as a two-pronged thing. We think about extending the user experience, and we think about accessing the underlying data, so extending the user experience to go and reach all of those users, those hundreds of millions of users who have Office, and then integrating all of that back-end data, your own data and our data. So the OneNote API is really focused on data at the moment. I'm going to be talking about our REST API primarily today. But I want to show you how we think about that when integrated with the rest of Office to go and get that reach to users and how you can couple your apps into that ecosystem and hook up to all of those users while bringing in OneNote data and your own data as well. So, obviously from the title of the talk, it's a bit of a giveaway, really. We're announcing today support in the OneNote API for Office 365 in preview. For a year, we've now been working on our consumer API, and today we have pretty close to parity with that in preview today on Office 365. A couple of nits, which I'll show at the end, that we're still working the wrinkles out of. So what are the scenarios? What are the first things you do with OneNote through the API, typically? Well, the first thing you usually do is to go and take some content and bundle it up and send it off to OneNote. So maybe there's a report in your application, or maybe your app creates diagrams of some kind and you want to go and insert those into OneNote. Basically take the customer's information that they've created in your app and go push it into OneNote so it's there as part of their digital memory store and they can reuse it in their projects. So OneNote's content language is HTML. Very simple, you don't have to go and learn some new page description language to be able to program OneNote. All the HTML skills you've got just work. So we support a subset of HTML5. It's pretty much the obvious things. If you can see it in the OneNote UI and imagine what the HTML that you would use for that is, then we'll probably support it. It's a pretty good way to describe it. So you just go and post to our endpoint, and this is about the most simple page that you could post, and just say, hey, here's a body with, in this case, here's a header, and here's a picture of a cat. Place Kitten's an awesome way to go and get cat pictures off the web, by the way, any size you need. So that's great, but what I said, and that just creates a simple page with, you know, that picture under the text, very flat. But freeform content is really what we're all about in OneNote. So to go and create freeform content, you're going to want to absolutely position things on the page and be a bit more creative in where you put things. So to do that, we're just going to use standard CSS styling inline in the HTML. So you can see here that I'm just setting up the positions and using absolute positions on the div. There's a div there that I've now gone and put in some text. And then yet another cat picture positioned over on the right. So who here is a cat person? Yeah, nobody. Who's a dog person? Oh, boy, you guys are going to have a really bad time in this presentation. I'm very sorry. Not for the presentation, for you being dog people. So let's go, and rather than looking at all this in PowerPoint, let's go and look at it in some code instead. So I'm just going to flip over. A great way to kick the tires of our API is we've got an API console from our friends over at Apigee. You can get to this from our dev portal at dev.onenote.com. And it just gives you a way to go and poke the API and just make some calls and experiment around. In this case, it's connected to our consumer service. So I'm going to go and choose to post a page. And I'm going to... Oh, I'm sorry. Is that on the wrong screen? Okay. There we go. That's not terribly big on there. Let's see if I can make that a bit bigger. Okay. I'm just going to zap the existing content a little bit. Oops, now I can't see. So let's go and zap that content. Oops. All the way down to the bottom. It's a little bit awkward when you're trying to play with two scroll bars at once, so bear with me a second. So I'll go and shift click that. And back up to the top again. Okay. So now we can go and paste the content. Now I'm actually just going to paste the content in directly out of my PowerPoint, because PowerPoint really is a coding tool. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. And we'll go and paste that content in. And so I've got my div with my absolute positions, my image with my absolute positions. I'm going to go and send that off to OneNote service. Okay, and oh, my looks like my auth has run out. Let's go and redo the auth. Yeah. Why is that not working? Password isn't incorrect, I promise you. Okay, give it one more try. Make sure I've not got the caps lock on. There we go, I had got the caps lock on. Okay. And the question is, did that post it? No, it's gone back to the original body. Ah, no, it hasn't. There we go, all right. So I'll send that off. Sorry about that. Okay, so it's created the page. So you can see that it's just sending me the response back here. And I've got the usual kind of response I get from an API. I've got a JSON packet telling me what was just created. And there's typical properties here about the page, so the title of the page, when it was created, who last modified it, all the sort of things you'd normally expect to get. And there's a couple of really interesting properties. Down here, under this links object, So we've got a couple of URLs to be able to go and launch that page, either in the web client for OneNote or in the rich client. So I'm going to grab the rich client link. So you see that's a OneNote colon URL. And I'm going to grab that and just paste it into the browser. And that's going to launch my OneNote application, which I'm going to drag over to the other screen. So here we go. And it's launched me in to create my page from the OneNote console. And there I've got my kitten. So that's creating a page. Now let's go and look into the next sort of thing you typically do. So I've created a page in OneNote. I normally then, when I want to enrich my experience, want to go and create a picker to say where, to the user, where do you want to go and put this page within your OneNote? We have a hierarchical structure of notebooks with sections within them and the pages within those. And then we also have a concept called section groups if you need a deeper hierarchy. Section groups are a recursive containment structure that we can have if you really want that kind of more complex notebook. So to do that, I'm going to go and fire up one of our sample apps. So this sample app, we've just put a new version of this up on GitHub today. Actually, I'm going to switch over to duplicate mode. There we go, that's better. So this app's up on GitHub today. We've just added O365 support for it. Essentially, it's an API Explorer application. So just run it up so you can see what it does. So this essentially gives you ways to post a whole bunch of different requests to our API surface and play with the results and see what you get back. And you can flip between Office 365 authentication or our consumer authentication. So let's go and have a look at grabbing those sections. So first thing we'll do is say we'll take a list of all notebooks. So I'm going to go and debug this. It's just going to flip me into the code. And you'll see me again saying I've got to set up a header. I'm going to create an HTTP request, as you'd expect. C# code. I'm going to set an authentication. So we're using OAuth2 authentication like the rest of our O365 services. I'm going to set that as a bearer token. And that's going to ask me to go and log in. So am I spelling that correctly? Yep. And this is going to then show me the list of scopes. So this is the set of scopes that I can choose on the API. So scopes tell you what your app is allowed to do through OAuth, what I can do to the OneNote. What I'd encourage you to do is go and choose the smallest scope that you need to get the job done. Users will take confidence from the fact that all you want to do is post a page to their application, or all you want to do is be able to edit the pages that you already created. What I've done here, so you can see them all, is ask for every scope. Please don't do that. Users will typically freak out when they see some huge list of demands for your application unless they think they're really going to need them. I'm going to accept those scopes. And then I'll flip me back to the code. And you can see that here I'm just calling the get method. And my API route is OneNote.com beta API mean notes, which is a root path for us. And then I'm going to call and say, can I get all of the notebooks, please? So I'm just going to let that run through. And that's going to come back and bring me that. The body there. I'm going to paste that into something that's a wee bit easier to see, because that's not too easy to see. I've got an online JSON parser here that I'm just going to paste it into. Oops. Okay, obviously didn't copy that. Hang on a second. There we go. So now you can see we're just returning the JSON structure, this time for a notebook. And again, it's the kind of things you'd expect to see. Do I own the notebook? Is the notebook shared with anybody? The name of the notebook, last modified time, that sort of thing. And again, the links URLs to let me go and open that particular notebook in either of the OneNote clients. And if you choose the OneNote client, you saw that open the Windows desktop client there. You can use that same URL on any device, and it'll go and open the appropriate client on the device you're installed in. So it just works cross-platform seamlessly. So that's my notebook. So what about if I want to drill down? We've got a hierarchical structure. If I look in here, I've got URLs to let me go and use hypermedia to go and jump through to see the sections in the notebook. I've got a section URL there and a section groups URL. But that's a lot of round trips. You can imagine I can do the sections URL. If I get the sections, I'll then see the pages, and I can just keep drilling through. Great for exploring the API, but not so great for performance. So because we're using OData, we can go and use a nice trick of OData and use something called expand. So expand in OData allows you to walk across relationships in your data model, or in our case, walk across the hierarchy of OneNote, and go and get everything in one go. So let's go back and see an expand call. So this time, we're just going to run that through. I won't bother debugging it. And we'll see what we've got. So now it's the same notebook, but now I'm going to scroll down. When I get to the sections, you'll see that it's embedded all of the section requests, and they've got a similar JSON structure, but they're all just listed out here as children of the notebook, all in that single round trip. And there they've got the pages URL. And I could have done the expand further down and drilled into the pages and got my full list of pages. In fact, there's a complicated expression which you'll find in the slides that lets me go and get the whole thing, a complete hierarchy of everything in your notebook, all the way down from the notebook through the section groups, even if they recurse, all the way into the pages. So you can do the whole lot in one round trip and be as performant as you like. Okay, so pages, that's the next interesting thing to look at. So if I go up to my pages section, because we're using OData, we've got a query language for pages that's completely standard across all of the other O365 endpoints. So we can go and say, hey, go and find me the pages where the title contains Paris, or the pages created after a certain time. So here I'm going to go and use a title query. If I go and look at my notebook and see what pages I've got to query for, I'm gonna flip to my business notebook here on O365, I've got a bunch of pages. Obviously another page with cats on it. Those are actually my cats. Those are not random cats off the web. I had to get special permission to use those. But I've got a bunch of pages that have page in the title. So let's go and see if we can pull those back. So hit page in there. And this time I will do a debug. And hop through and you can see the message. So here we're just using the syntax that OData provides to let us do the query. So we're calling the pages endpoint, and then we're saying filter equals contains, and then title, and the string I put in, which is page. So I'm just saying contains the word page in the title property of any of my page objects. So let's run that. And you should see that I've got a couple of items have come back. So these are the three pages that have got title in the page, and indeed they all have. Awesome. So what do I want to do with a page? I'm going to pick a page now. Sort of things I might want to do is synchronize pages with some content in my app. Maybe I've got a to-do list app, and I want to synchronize a bunch of checkboxes in OneNote on the page. So I'm going to need the content for the page, and then I'm going to need to update the content for the page. So we have a simple content property you can see on the page, which if I just scroll down to it, there we go, content URL. So that's going to be letting me go and grab that content. And just the same thing as we created pages using HTML, the content we get back from OneNote is going to be HTML. So let's have a look what that looks like. So let's go pick one of these interesting pages, and we'll choose the one with the cat picture on it, obviously. Pull that back, and then have a look at the HTML that we get back. So as we've released it very conveniently, I'm going to use our wonderful Visual Studio Code and to look at the HTML. And we'll make that a bit bigger again. So you can see straight away that this is actually fairly simple HTML. If you think about going and doing view source on your typical web page, the HTML that comes back these days is pretty intimidating a lot of the time. We try very hard not to make this difficult to parse. You're going to need to parse this to be able to then go and update it. So that has some consequences, though. What that means is this doesn't actually render brilliantly in a browser. So if you just take this HTML for a page, throw it into a browser, you'll be able to see what's going on, and you know, you'll have a div in the right position and a cat in the right position. But it won't be that pretty, and the the fonts might be a little bit off. If you've got checkboxes, they're not going to show up because we just supply the data for checkboxes, not an actual visual rendering. And that's a deliberate decision here, to be able to say, hey, this HTML is optimized for you to process it, update it, and send it back into us. It's not optimized for rendering. So you can see what we've got here is our body with our attributes saying I'm going to enable absolute positions. And then I've got the first div with a bunch of text about cats, naturally. Lorem ipsum shaped specifically for cats from catnipsum.com. And then, if I scroll down a bit to the bottom, I've got my absolutely positioned image. And this time, of course, the image is not from the original source I sent it in. So we're not just providing a web page redirect and rendering it. We're not a browser. We've actually gone and taken the image from the web, sucked it in, and stored it in OneNote. So you've got a snapshot of that there. And so the URL for the image here is from our resources endpoint. Now, I bring that up because when you go and try and make a call on this, you're also going to need to go and pass the authentication token when you make a GET call on this to go and pull down the image if I want to go and get that cat picture. And you wouldn't have to do that in a normal browser session. Obviously, you'd have a URL that was from the web originally that didn't need any auth. So that's just something to remember as you're coding against this. You need to go and push the auth token in for every request. OK, so I've got that now. Now, what about updating it? Now, I'm going to flip back to my slides for a moment because this is easier to explain from a slide. Somewhere down here. There we go. So as I said, OneNote is a very freeform canvas. And its user model is not the same as unit programming against a database. When you send stuff in, users can have pretty much messed with anything that you sent in. And that means the programming model for updating really needs to be about going and doing a get of the current content of the page, accepting whatever the user has done to it, understanding it the best you can, and then changing that and posting it atomically back to us. So the way you do that is you go and make a call to get content and add an extra query parameter, include IDs equals true. What that's going to do is go and add an extra ID to every element that's patchable or updatable on the page. So you've got something to immediately call patch on. Now, those IDs are not persistent. They're just there for the moment. But you use them in this patch language that you can see in the next line. So if you go and patch on that same URI with the HTTP patch verb, then there's this very simple JSON language which you send to us to go and make a change to the page. The target is one of those entities that we've just given you an ID back. So in this case, this is a header one element in my HTML with an ID of whatever that GUID is. And then the action can either be replaced. Here I'm replacing the header one with a cat, or to go and append something on the end of it, or to go and insert something anywhere in the tree. You can also patch the title. And you'll notice that when I'm replacing the content, I'm actually setting a custom property, data ID equals kitten. So what this is letting me do is say, hey, this thing on the page is something special that I'm going to want to come back to later. I can patch that directly using kitten as the ID rather than that big GUID, if it's still there. Remember, don't rely on this stuff. The user can have done anything to the page. They could have gone and deleted my kitten, heaven forbid. So again, you still, even if you've put those things in your page, you still want to go and pull the page back using include IDs. But what they can do is really give you hints when you're walking through the page to say, ah, yes, this is the first text underneath the kitten, and that's really what I want to change. So it gives you a way to map your way around the page, despite the craziness of user changes that might have happened since last somebody ran your app. And then the other thing you can do is just go and append to the core body of the page. So you can think about scenarios where you want to create some kind of log of ongoing data that's just coming in and filling in a OneNote page, or daily status updates or something like that, or even just a web log. So let's go and see how that works. So we're going to go and append here. So let's choose a page to append to. And I'm going to pick a page called Oh Dear. And go debug this. OK. So what I've done here, to be able to send that little patch language, I've just created a simple .NET class with my target action and content as strings. And then I'm just going to serialize that and send that over my as my request. So, oops. So creating my HTTP client, adding my headers and my auth. So I'm going to make a list of those patch commands. You send in a list of patch commands, and we'll execute them sequentially in a batch. I'm going to say add to the body. I'm going to append, and given the what I know is the content of the page, I'm going to put something much more important. I'm going to say dogs drool. Okay, and then go run that. Yeah. Okay. Apparently, I made a horrible edit. Not sure what I did there, other than change a string. Okay. Oh well. I won't do my super funny dog joke. I'll just let it say new trailing content, which I'm sure you'll be grateful for. And you can see I've got a 200 success there, no content, because there's really nothing to say about a patch having happened. And when I go and have a look in OneNote, hopefully now that should start to show up. So there's my dog page, and then I'll just refresh that. Usually you don't have to refresh in OneNote. OneNote's not a refresh model, but sometimes the run up to the internet and then a batch operation can take a couple of seconds. So here we are, this is my new training content patched onto the page. Okie dokie. So that's all the basics that we've had for a while. We're also announcing today that we've got delete finally on our API. So we've got all of CRUD there, create, read, update, and delete. And as you expect, that's just the HTTP delete verb against the same page URIs. So we've seen all of that. So it wouldn't really be a whole lot of fun if all you could do was take, you know, simple content, text, and images, even if they were great cat pictures, and push them in and out of OneNote. What you've really got to do is start adding some value on top of that. So we have a bunch of extra features where we'll go and take the things you push to us and do some more with them. So for example, if you send us a URL, we'll go and grab that web page and insert it into your OneNote, take a snapshot of it for you. We do this with the data render source attribute that you can see here. So here I'm going and grabbing a page off Amazon.com. But if you ask us to create that image, and if I'd said image here instead of div, we'd have just done that. We'd have just gone and created an image in your OneNote page from Amazon. Because I said div, and I said data render method equals extract, we're going to try and be a bit smarter than just creating a simple image. We will create the image if we can't do anything else. But what we're going to do is try and extract some juice from that web page instead and put something that's more useful to the user. So for an Amazon page, for example, or any other product page, we'll go and scrape the actual interesting information, the product details, and just put that as more malleable, more readable text on the page for you. And a typical example, you would also obviously go and put the full page tucked away somewhere as well. But it's pretty nice to just be able to have the raw product information on a page when you've captured it. And this is what our Clipper does. The same for articles. So if you go and send us the URL of a news article, we'll go and give you a nice read view of the news article rather than all the junk that might be around it on the web page that was originally hosting it. And for a recipe, we'll go and extract the list of ingredients because that's really the first thing you want to get to. And then the final one that we have some smarts around, and I'm going to dive into that in my main demo, is business cards. So I won't go into that now because we're going to see a lot of that in a bit. So we've launched this new API for OneDrive for Business. We've changed our URI endpoint for anybody who's familiar with what we've had in the consumer space over the last year to add in this me notes prefix to all of our URIs. That lets us converge Office 365 and our consumer Microsoft ID logins to give us space to go and reach into different users' accounts. So you'll see this now as our preferred way of calling both our consumer and Office 365 APIs. And then as we move forward, we'll allow you to go and replace that token of me with, you know, Bob at contoso.com or Gareth at microsoft.com to go and reach into individual people's accounts if you have permissions and go and contribute to and work with their shared OneNotes. And then we don't have this live today, but we will have over the next couple of weeks in beta for you to be able to work with OneNotes hosted on shared SharePoint sites. You'll just go and reach into my organization and look into the site collection and the site with the appropriate IDs. Or we'll have a URI, a method that takes a URI from a traditional SharePoint URI to allow you to go and work with those notebooks. So today that's in preview. We'll be in general availability sometime in the summer with all of this. Obviously, by the time we release that, we'll have fixed a few of the little things we have at the moment that are not the same as our consumer endpoint. So right now you can't, there's no notion of a default notebook in O365, which means you can't just post a raw page and expect it to just appear in a simple notebook. So we'll have that soon. We also don't have search at the moment. You could have that structured query that I showed you, but there's no free text search. We'll have that before we hit GA. And at the moment the performance is not too hot on O365. We don't have a lot of indexing going on behind the scenes, and we'll have that up and running by the time we go GA. So once we've gone GA, next steps on this are then to go and support the converged API endpoint. So if you've seen any of those Office 365 sessions where we're switching to graph.microsoft.com to go and converge the endpoint across all of our APIs and let you have the goodness of being able to walk from a SharePoint server into its files or into the OneNote notebooks that are stored on it, we'll have that kind of support. And then it's the same for modern groups. So far, everything's really been kind of a bit theoretical. Here's a JSON packet. Let's actually look at a real problem and pull it together. So who here's got a pocket full of business cards from people they've met at the convention? Yeah, a few of you. The rest of you are obviously a wee bit too modern. Well, I certainly pick up an enormous amount as I go around these things giving these talks. And over the years, I've tried to type them into Outlook contacts. And I've been pretty good at it, but my Outlook contacts, consequentially, have built up to the point where there are thousands of them. And so it's pretty unwieldy on all my devices. And honestly, when I look down them, I have this awful feeling of, who's that? Because it's some person that I met for 10 minutes in, 2007, and I just don't have enough context to be able to remember who they were. So what I've started to do is to store my business cards in OneNote. And although there's a notes field in Outlook, I never really felt motivated to use it, but I just have started to just type in a tiny little bit of context when I scan a business card and drop it in. So here's a business card from a guy called Elmer Thomas. We're on the wrong screen. Why is that? There we go. From a guy called Elmer Thomas, who did some work with last year, from SendGrid, the email company. And we put together a mashup of OneNote and SendGrid. And I've got its contact here, and even in a few years, those couple of lines that I just typed in around there, just to tell me that, hey, this is, remember, it's the guy you did the mashup with. I'm sure we're going to, jog my memory enough to be able to work with it. Another one here from a friend and colleague, Dave O'Neill, who we've been working with to test some of our API scalability. So this is just how I'm starting to install these things. I copied a couple over into my demo notebook for this session. And it's pretty nice. I can go and click on David's email address and just go and launch Outlook. And we've even inserted an embedded object, a VCF or vCard, that I can just go and click on and make a contact if I do want to actually push somebody into my Outlook contacts that I'm going to do business with a bit more frequently. And that's great, but it's a little bit of a context switch still. I'm still thinking I'm in email, I want to type an email to Dave. Well, okay, I've got to flip over to OneNote, do a quick search. Okay, we've got great search facilities. And then go and click on that and flip back into Outlook. Couldn't we do a bit better than that? So let's look at the flow that we'd really like. So has somebody got a business card I can steal? Go on, one of you must have a business card. There's a prize in it for you. Does that motivate you to reach in your pockets? No, I know you. You can't have a prize. No, I know you. Oh, man. Nah, there's a gentleman there. Sorry, Darren. There you go. You win an awesome one API backpack just for a business card. I hope it works. All right. So I've got a business card. I'm going to pull this in. So I'm going to pull up Office Lens now. Flip this over to the Elmer. Okay, so this is my iPhone. Office Lens is an app that we released across all mobile platforms. Whoa, nice reflection. And just fire that up. And it's essentially a virtual scanner. So let's go and pull that in, take a picture, and then stick it down again. So it's taking a picture of the business card. So hopefully, I put it in photo mode, sorry, wrong mode. There we go, document mode. So you can see what it's done there is it's gone and adjusted the aspect ratio of the really rubbish photo that I took. It's gone and removed any reflection. So it does some really nice image processing to give you the best possible image you can. So now I like that image, and so I'm just going to say done. And I'm going to send that across to OneNote. Now, I actually don't have a build of Office Lens on my phone that sends directly to Office 365, so I'm going to cheat a little bit here and send it to my consumer account and then just copy-paste it across. So I'm going to send that across. And you can see that's transferring. And I'll go and pull my account up over on my other machine while that's doing its thing. Okay. That's finished. So switch into my consumer account. And there we go. There it is appearing. So I'm just going to take a copy of that and move it into my Office 365 account. Oops. Okay, I didn't copy that. Hang on. Copy. And go paste it in here. All right. So there you go, Bob. I hope you don't mind being on the big screen. So you can see what this has done. It's going to take Bob's business card, and it's going to do that nice extraction and give me a really easy to parse thing. Okay, so let's go and have a look at how the code would have worked for that under the covers. So if we go and look at create pages and create page with a business card and go and debug that. So what I'm going to do now is, if I want to send that kind of thing for a business card, I've obviously got the image locally in my scanner application as a bitmap. So to send that kind of data across to the OneNote API and do that in a single round trip, we actually just wrap all the data up in a multi-part MIME message. That's super easy to do in most languages, to go and just put that envelope around it, to send the binary stream and to send the HTML that consumes it in the same packet. So let's look how that works. So let's take a look at the HTML here. So you can see what I'm doing here is I'm inserting a div in my HTML with my data render method equals extract, which is going to fire off that nice business card extraction. And this time I'm saying my data render source. And I've got this funny little name colon one there. So the one obviously is my string, is my print string.format, where I'm going to put in the name of my multi-part MIME part that contains the image. And then name colon is a little URI protocol handler that we've got in the OneNote API that says, hey, if you've got a multi-part message, then name colon means go and pick out the data from the named part in the multi-part messenger. So all parts in a multi-part MIME message have a unique name. So that's going to just go and suck in that data. And then I've got this extra attribute data render fallback, which is going to say, if we're unable for some reason to extract anything from this, what would you like us to do? Would you like us to just put the image, or would you like us to do nothing? Now, I've chosen none here, and I've chosen, and this is usually a pretty good bet to say none, but then actually go and you can see that I've directly put in the image as well. So there'll always be the image of the business card, and then optionally, there'll be the extracted component at the top. So I'll always have both, and I'll fall back essentially to just having the image. Okay, so I have that HTML, and I'm gonna go and read a business card. Now, I haven't got a good enough camera on this laptop to have done the photo take on the laptop. So I'm actually just going and loading a cheap and cheerful business card here that I've created. And you can see this is not super high res, so it doesn't need to be perfect, but it's still better than I could manage with my camera on my laptop. So I'm loading that one in this demo code, and then I'm creating a message, and I'm posting it in this case to a hard-coded section. Obviously, you'd go and choose a section in your application called business cards and go and find the ID of that via the API, or you'd let the user pick where they wanted to put it, as you saw in the picker in Office Lens. I've just hard-coded it for now. So I'm making an HTTP request message with a multi-part content. Super simple, as I say, just a few lines of code. The string content for my HTML, and then the binary content with my image part. So let's go run that. Hopefully I get a 201. There we go, I've created it. And once again, I'll go and copy my OneNote URL. And actually, I'll probably just easier to load it. And with a bit of luck, oh, there we go, it's just appeared. So here's my Hester J. Clark with my nasty made-up business card. So super easy to go and send that kind of thing and build off applications like Office Lens. Now then, what do I actually want to do with that to solve the problem? Well, what I've got here that I'm going to run up and show you is an add-in for Outlook. So I had that experience of going into OneNote and clicking on the email address, and that being a context switch from Outlook. I'd really much rather just access this data as though it was a sort of secondary contact book inside Outlook. So hopefully that's fired up. Apparently it didn't fire off Chrome. Let's start it again. So I just created this using the wizard. So the wizard is going to create me a two-solution project in Visual Studio. We'll come back and have a look at that later. But it fires up Outlook, just so you get a sense of where it is we're actually going with this. And I set it to go, and as an add-in to Outlook, to work in the Compose screen for creating a new mail, because really that's where the time where I'm most wanting to go and pick an address to send to from my pseudo address book in OneNote. So if I go and say new, what you see is my apps bar shows up, and then I've got a nice app, OneNote for Outlook here. Choose that, and it's going to churn away for a little bit and go and pull out all of those business cards with a bit of luck. So there we go, and there's Bob. So I can just go and send Bob an email, very trivially, even though that's not stored anywhere in Outlook at all. And if I want to go and add him as a contact, well, that's an easy thing to do. Okay, so how's that application built? Oh, actually, just before I show you that, of course, the other great thing about this being an add-in for Outlook, an Office add-in, is this works in all versions of Outlook. So here's the desktop version, and I'll go and say Apps for Office in there. Could equally be the iPad version, and we've got other versions coming supporting that, obviously. So I'll go and start that. And exactly the same thing happens in the desktop version, running exactly the same code from the same server. And there we go. This time I'll choose Elma. And there we go. So how's that built? Let's go and have a look at that. How am I doing for time? Awesome. So I just choose the wizard here. Let's just stop that. So if I use the wizard to start this up, I'd go into New Project and then just choose Office and choose Apps for Office. And that would start to ask me which ops I wanted to run it into. If I choose Outlook, I'd get a project that looks like this, with a couple, a solution rather, that looks like this, with a couple of projects. So just one very trivial project that's essentially got a manifest file that just describes how my application is going to run inside Office, where it lives on the server, where it's which web pages it should start up, and how it should run. So in, should it run in the read form? Well, no, I don't want to run in the read form. I said I wanted to run in the compose form and only for email messages. And when I do, I want you to start this home homepage inside my web app, which is the second project. So then the web app, and the wizard would just create you a completely static web page, which is great. You know, it's a good way to get started, but obviously you mostly don't want static HTML server these things. You want something dynamic coming from the server. So I just converted mine, being a C-sharp guy, to an ASP.NET MVC app. So that's what you see down here is the usual MVC stuff. So I've got a couple of controllers. So I put my home controller, which matches that page which I'm starting, which is just going to do some very simple logic to say, hey, do I already have a cookie that's signed in to the service? If I don't, then I'm going to redirect you across to the OAuth endpoint. Having redirected you across the OAuth endpoint, that's going to do its sign-in magic and then bounce me back through the OAuth redirect mechanism to another controller I've got set up, an OAuth controller. That's actually going to go and do a token exchange and then write that into a cookie that I can use in my front-end web page and then bounce me back yet again to my home controller, which this time when I run it is going to say, oh, yes, I have got the cookie, so I'd better show the view. And that view is, as you'd expect, the list. So let's see how that works. So my home view down here is a super simple page, couldn't really get more trivial, that just says, hey, there's an empty div called sections and that text of OneNote contacts. And then that sections just gets filled in dynamically by making calls from the client side to the API. Now, of course, I could have gone, this is a CSHTML page, I could have gone and just made all those calls on the server, perfectly reasonable thing to do. But I wanted to show you that we can run this code both, you know, I've done the auth from the server side, and I'm going to get the API calls from the client side. So you can do a very dynamic Ajax-based thing. That's the way I'm going to code it. And that we support the cause endpoint necessary to be able to do that from our API. So all of the code lives in this app.js file. And my JavaScript is very rusty, so I've got to say a big thanks to Yinir on my team, who helped me a lot with this, because I really would have struggled to code it up otherwise. Any mistakes and bad things in it are entirely mine, though, not his. So I'm going to run the page up, and I'm going to make a call to the service just to start things up and get some raw data. So the call I'm going to make here is to get to the notes sections endpoint. So I'm going to get all of the sections. And I'm going to get their ID and name. So select does like the equivalent of a database select to let me pick particular fields, so I'm not bringing such big JSON packets back across the wire. And the ID and name are all I need. And then I'm going to use that expand function we described earlier and pull down the pages in the sections. And again, I'm going to ask for the title of the page and the ID. And I'm going to say also get the content URL field so I can go and pull the content of the web page. So you can see I'm actually doing an indiscriminate call here. I'm getting all of the pages in my notebook. I've actually no idea if they've got business cards in them at this point. Later in the year, we'll have search APIs that'll let you actually go and say, hey, I'd like all of the pages that have got business cards in or all of the pages with products in. We haven't got that yet, so I'm doing a kind of brute force approach. So having pulled those down, I then call load page content with that data. And what I've got when I pull that down, because I've done the expand, is a nested structure where I've got a list of sections, and inside each section, I've got a list of pages. So I've just got a nested for loop here to move over that. And for each of those pages, I'm going to actually go and need to pull the content down to say, hey, has it got a business card inside it or not? So I'm going to queue up a bunch of calls here just by putting them onto a list to the page's endpoint, and the page's endpoint passing the ID that I got back from the structure and ask for the content off the end of it, the content property. So having put all of those in a queue, I'm just going to let the browser walk through as fast as it can, asynchronously calling those and taking the results of those calls, which would be my chunks of HTML, and sticking those mapped into an array. So I'm going to make those calls here and map them in. And then when I get that array back, it's going to be an array full of HTML that I can walk across, driven from that asynchronous call pattern. So I'm going to walk through that HTML. I'm going to do a very light parse, which I won't get into here, just to go and say, hey, find me that div, because I know there's going to be a div that's on the page holding the business card, if there is one. And if there is, I would like you to look for the object tag. So the object tag in HTML is how HTML has done attachments since time immemorial, and it's exactly the same way that we do on-page attachments in OneNote. So I've got that VCF card attachment there. And I want to say, hey, are there any object tags? And if there are, find me ones whose name contains VCF. I probably should have done .vcf there, but anyway, it's just a simple way to say, hey, go and get me the ones that have actually got something I can use as a contact for Outlook. And if I've got any of those, well, if this is a new section, go and create some UI for the section with a div in Outlook, in the pane, and then for each entry, go and create a div for the actual page with the business card on it. And just use the name of the business card as the name of the page, as you saw in that list in the UI. And then there's one final thing I need to do. I need to set up a click handler for that page. Now, I didn't want to actually go and pull the VCF business card. I knew it was there. I've got the object tag, but that's not the data of the VCF. I didn't want to pull it for all of them because that would be kind of spendy. So I thought I'd do the pull when you go and click on the item. It's fast enough to be able to do that. So I just set that up again. So when I do a click, then I'm going to do one more AJAX call, and I'm going to pass in the resource URL and the token. So if you remember, we said that when you needed to do a secondary call to go and get a cat picture, or in this case, a business card VCF file, I've got to go and pass through the token again to make an extra call. It won't just pick it up automatically. And I'm setting that up from the data attribute on the object tag. So that's the standard HTML data attribute that says, hey, here's the stream which actually backs the attachment, and then pulling down the token from the cookie to pass in. So that's my click handler. The last thing I need to do is actually do something with the data. So when the click gets called, the last thing it does is adds that VCF, parses it out. A VCF is actually just a new line separated file with name colon value structures in there. So it's parsed out the first name and the email address, very simply in that JSON, and I'm passing that through to the add to recipients. And this is where I'm going to call some of the Outlook JavaScript object model. Very trivial piece of that to just go and say, here's the message to compose. I want to add to the to field and send the address that I've created. So really, really simple code to get really quite a rich experience in Outlook. That you can see could be the start of, you know, a relatively professional integration. So, what do we see there? We saw a rich mobile application, but using incredibly simple code to go and get most of its value from the service that we've provided, going and doing that business card extraction. Equally, could be doing the same for products or articles. And then an add-in in Office, allowing us to reach the huge number of hundreds of millions of users. And thinking of this as a digital memory store. So we haven't had to go and add all of those contacts into our transactional contact store. This is a really great way that we think OneNote can be used, is essentially to say, hey, I've got all of this stuff that's in some intermediate state. You know, it's either an early form thought, or it's a project that me and a few people are working on that isn't quite finished yet, or it's a contact that's not really ready to be in my main contacts. It's just one I might need some point. And I want to go and write some extra context around that. So there's, you know, an association of structured data and completely loose unstructured data, which OneNote's really great at. But then I want to go and push that into a productivity experience on the fly. I want to go and surface it dynamically. So one final thing to announce. You saw me there writing a lot of HTTP code, creating things. That's fine, a lot of people like to code like that. But equally, a lot of people prefer to use an SDK and never see most of that HTTP governance. So we're announcing today our first SDKs for iOS and Android. So next time you see me coding a demo like this, I'll probably do one using SDKs, and there won't be any HTTP stuff there. Just go grab them on GitHub with the rest of the Office SDKs. At the moment, they only work against our consumer endpoint, which is the one that's in production as opposed to preview. We'll add Office 365 support soon and certainly have it there by the time we go general availability. And at the moment, it's Android and iOS, and we'll add .NET Portable and probably a bunch of other libraries as time goes by. Go grab them on GitHub. There's just a little sample there of the iOS code. So where are we going with all this? We've seen some pretty great usage and scenarios to use with what we've currently got. But there's certainly a lot more to come. So we've heard very strongly from our users that reacting to changes in OneNote is a key scenario. Synchronization between data in apps and data in OneNote is a very popular thing to want to do. It's kind of hard at the moment. You have to go and poll against our service. We don't mind you polling against our service. We can cope with it. But obviously, it's a pretty unpleasant thing to do from a code point of view. So we'll have webhooks to allow you to just come and register for change notifications. Obviously, we're going to build more SDKs, as I said, and we'll update our samples to use those SDKs. Now, ink on OneNote is a huge part of our rich content story. And today, there's no support for it in our APIs. We're obviously going to want to add that so you can bring rich ink-based features into your own applications. Copy notebooks and make it mine. It's really interesting to start to use OneNote as a lightweight publishing platform. So to go and say, hey, here's a public OneNote with some awesome content in it, whether that's in the education space or advertising, or perhaps you're running some sort of promotion on the web, and you've got some content that you want people to take and put their own stories around. Say I'm pushing out a new product and I want to get people to write a diary of their usage of it and then send it back to me, or run a competition where people write a short story about something and I've got a story template I want to put out there and then have people submit those back. Really compelling scenario that's been really difficult to achieve so far. So having APIs to allow you to go and copy a notebook into a customer's account, into a user's account, or to just have UI directly in the OneNote client, so when they come to your shared notebook, they can say, hey, make a copy of this that's mine. So we want to open those scenarios up. We've also heard from you that it's, at the moment, too hard to actually get recognition. So we've got our gallery of applications, but people have actually got to go to that, and not everybody does all the time. So people want better ways to surface their applications and to bring their user communities and ours together. So we'll do some work to support those. And then finally, in terms of things that we've currently got engineers working on, is the ability to go and embed OneNote in your own applications. So people have asked us again and again to say, hey, this data integration is fine, but can we have some UI integration? Can I just go and plop OneNote as a piece of note-taking goodness in the middle of my app? And later in the year, we'll have that ability for you to just go and iframe a OneNote page and put it inside your application super quickly, super easily, and get all of that value in just a couple of lines of code. So this roadmap's been out there for a couple of weeks now on the web. We try and keep a public roadmap there. We're pretty open on the team. A lot of these things came from ideas that were heavily voted on User Voice. A lot of the things we've already done are things that we've completed on User Voice. We really do take it seriously. It's something that that we really focus our planning process. So please go and contribute on there. So if you want to use these new Office 365 APIs, obviously you're going to need an Office 365 account. Easiest way to get that is with our new Office 365 developer program. Go to devoffice.com dev program, particularly sign up for a free developer subscription, but get all sort of the extra goodness as well, tools, training, newsletters to see what's coming out, find out when we go GA, that kind of thing. So what's my call to action for you? Well, the first thing is our consumer APIs are in production for you to go and actually ship apps against, so please go do that right now. Go home, build apps, using all of that rich stuff that I've shown you. All of it works as well in our consumer as well as our O365 with exactly the same endpoints now they're converged. So your code will work pretty much unaltered when we go GA against the Office 365 or consumer, but you can ship the consumer ones today. Start playing with the Office 365 stuff. Tell us whether there are any gaps we've missed as we go through our beta cycle and our preview cycle. Start migrating those consumer apps that you've already got to use the me/notes endpoints. And particularly think about your line of business applications and how you can integrate those. It's a great source for data. People have got all sorts of notes, or things that they want to compose. You can imagine doing your performance reviews rather than just in some nasty, janky web tool, go and do those in OneNote and be able to upload those, or to go and push reports into and use that as a way to go and distribute your organizational data to folks. Tell us what you need. As I've said on User Voice, we really do take it seriously. Or just bug us on Twitter. The team are all on there, the product team. It's not just marketing folks. So our resource site is dev.onenote.com. That's where you can find everything I've talked about today. And OneNote Dev is our Twitter handle. Really do want you to engage with us on there. Please take some time, if you like cats, to evaluate this section. For the dog people out there, I'd really rather you didn't, okay? Okay, thanks for taking the time and staying with me until the end here. Have an awesome time at the party.